Shalom, everyone, and welcome to the Middle East and Beyond. I'm Barry Stagner, and I'm here with Amir Sarfati. Shalom, Amir.
Hey, shalom, Barry. It's good to be with you, and it's good to be with everyone. I know it's a little bit of a surprise to broadcast in an unusual day, unusual time. That may explain the low number of people that are now watching. However, we ask you to share this video so others can now see it and understand that we are indeed live. And we ask you to comment and also to like the video. And this is the only way people will even know that we get this. Barry, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. And it's not only an unusual time, we're in an unusual place for the broadcast of here. Maybe you can tell everybody where we're at and what we're doing.
Yes, we're in Victoria in British Columbia here in Canada, on the western coast of Canada. Victoria is the capital of British Columbia, and it's a beautiful town. We're here because yesterday we had a book signing event at the largest Christian books and music store here in Victoria. A rare breed. These things vanish from our world, unfortunately. But tonight we have an evening of Bible prophecy. I'm going to give a message, and then Pastor Barry and myself are going to answer questions on mostly current events. We are extremely excited about that one.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of interesting being at the bookstore yesterday. It reminded me of really a day gone by, sadly, in the United States, specifically in Southern California. It used to be that you could pick and choose what Christian bookstore you were going to go to and find your favorite author or singer or artwork or apparel, all those kind of things. But the wonderful store we were at yesterday is now non-existent in Southern California. There's just no Christian bookstores at all. And some of the retailers now have a very small section dedicated to religious books. And that means anything and everything is on the shelf. So yeah. Kind of a sad commentary on how the U.S.
It is. It is sad. I remember coming to America for us in the late 90s and throughout, you know, the beginning of 2001 all the way to 2010, I guess. That was our greatest opportunity to visit bookstores we don't have in Israel. We have maybe one or two, but we could choose Bible covers and fish for our cars, you know, the fish emblem and different stuff that you can get for your Bible studies and stuff like that. And as you said, unfortunately, these things don't exist anymore in the numbers that we were used to. And so kudos to those that are still running them. And I hope that things will change in that area. Yes, Barry, we have a very full plate today.
That we do. And Amir, we've got some of the usual suspects on the radar for today's program. And things continue to make the news in Iran, and there's some rather curious explosions that continue to go on there. A lot of finger pointing, and you know, those who do not necessarily want to divulge where they think this is coming from, because then they'd be forced to retaliate in some form or fashion. So
yeah,
maybe you can fill us in on what's happening.
Yes.
There in Iran.
Well, as you can see on the map right now, these are the areas where over the last 3 weeks, mysterious explosions were reported, fires and explosions. We're talking about Mashhad, Seman, Tehran, Karau, Tabriz, Qom, Isfahan, Dezful, and Destan. Now, in most, if not all these cases, these are not some innocent fires that are in random places. These are in specific locations where either IRGC key people live or where they operate to promote Iran's programs, whether it's missile programs, oil industry, and all of that. So we're talking about every single day new thing. And the New York Times was running this article yesterday. Iranian officials suspect that the sabotage in a string of mysterious fires. And it's important that you understand, Pastor Barry, Iran is not only suffering from all of these, but it has a horrific shortage of water, very intense heat wave. This country, it reminds me a lot of Gaza when Hamas was taking all the money, and instead of investing it in infrastructures for people, Hamas basically invested everything in terror. and in efforts to bring about the end of Israel. This is the same thing with Iran. We have to understand the Ayatollahs, they do have money. It's just that the money goes to fund all of their proxies. Then the money goes to make missiles and drones and the nuclear program. And all of that has been obliterated within 12 days. And they have to start from scratch right now. And guess what? Do you think they learned their lesson and now they take all the money and invest it in their own people? No, they are trying to revive the missile program. They're trying to revive the nuclear program. They're trying to revive all of these things. And so the ordinary citizen in Iran is suffering just like the Gazans suffer from the lack of any treatment of decent treatment of its own regime. But let's go back to the actual mysterious fires. I don't know if I can say, I guess I can because it was in newspapers. But the in Israel, there is an in the engineering corps, there's a unit called Yahalom. There's a unit called Yahalom. Yahalom, which means diamond. Yahalom is the unit of the engineering corps that works under the ground. It basically identifies tunnels and it goes in, it dismantles whatever there is in the tunnel and then clear the place for the destruction of the tunnel by the IDF. The Yahalom was working in small scale in the past years, ever since we discovered that Hamas is digging tunnels and then Hezbollah. But ever since the beginning of the war, when we understood that the tunnels are not just one or two, we're talking about hundreds of tunnels, hundreds of miles length of tunnels. This is monstrous thing. The Yahalom unit is now getting bigger and bigger. We invest a lot in this. So today there was a ceremony where the unit's commander was replaced. And the outgoing commander said the following thing. Are you ready for this, Pastor Barry? He said this: our fighters worked above and below the ground in Iran. Again, our fighters worked above and below the ground in Tehran. And that tells you that currently, and I say that with as much caution as I can, but again, it's out in the open, it's in the media. I'm saying currently, Israeli troops are present in Gaza, the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, of course, Lebanon, Syria, Iran, and shocker, but also Yemen. We are actually telling the Yemenites, and if you follow me on Telegram, you know that. We're telling the Yemenite Houthis, expect something like the shock and awe 12 minutes, how we started the war with Iran. Expect that to happen in Yemen. And for that, in order to facilitate that, we need to already have people there on the ground. My point is that all the stuff that is going on in Iran is, for them, is mysterious. And by the way, they know exactly who is behind it, but they are very much afraid to say it. And why? The New York Times is saying also the reason why they are not saying it's Israel is because they know that if they blame us, they will then have to retaliate. And I don't think they are having any capability at this point to retaliate. Iran is not at any point right now where it's planning to launch some attack on Israel. This is what's going on in Iran. Apart from their own problems with no running water, not enough water, drinking water. By the way, they stopped the supply of water to pools and to parks and all of that. That's it. Iran, if Iran is dry, it looks dry, it'll look drier very soon as no more lawns and grassy areas will receive any irrigation. Enough is enough. And the people are now standing in line to get drinking water. You would expect that from a third world country. You would expect that maybe in Gaza, a war-afflicted area. No, it's in Iran. Iran, one of the largest countries in the Middle East, big. Pretty powerful also, at least was. And people are standing in line to get drinking water. That tells you how pathetic their situation is and how much even the Iranians can see that the lies and the deception of its own regime about being brave and about winning the war, I mean, it's all to cover up the incompetency of the regime to even deal with basic needs of its own civilians. So that's the story with Iran right now, as you can see.
Yeah, interesting that this is happening in a country where the provisions are in-house, so to speak. You know, you've got an oil-rich country, plenty of resources financially, and yet here you've got a 30% plus, pretty constant unemployment rate. You've got a massive amount of the population that's under 40 years of age, just wanting to raise a family.
Yeah.
And all of these ample resources within the country are targeted towards the destruction
yes.
of people group. And just incredible.
It's by the way, it's not just water, it's electricity as well. They don't have running electricity.
Right.
I mean, they have shortage of electricity every day. So give me the basic things of a civilian, water and electricity. In the modern world, in 2025, they don't have it. They don't have it. It's beyond me. And yet, yesterday, they announced that they are now testing a brand new missile that is even
exactly.
having a longer range and bigger impact. All that. That's how much they are trapped in this demonic attempt to destroy Israel. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Mayor, the Bible talks about Jesus specifically mentioned things being as they were in the days of Noah. And the limited information we have is that the whole earth was corrupt before God. And, you know, we pair that with things like Paul talking about the deception that's coming in the last days, the defection from truth. And I don't think we can limit that to simply defection from biblical truth. We see a defection from just truth in general today. And we have, as you like to refer to them, the Midianites, who are leading a false narrative and feeding it to the whole of the world about what's going on in Gaza, taking pictures from other countries of emaciated children and presenting that as though these are the Gazans who are starving to death because of the inhumane actions and the genocidal mindset of Israel. And maybe you can set the
yeah.
straight with what the facts actually are.
Yes. First of all, there is a great collusion of the media outlets with Hamas and with the UN, the three of those together, to promote a fake campaign of starvation in Gaza, which, by the way, contrary to reality. And let me make it very clear, Pastor Barry, this is a tactic of the enemy to make Israel look bad and to somehow get better conditions for them in the negotiations that we are running. And by the way, as of a few minutes ago, the special envoy of President Trump in the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, just said that Israel is returning its delegation from Doha in Qatar for some consultations. But that means that it's in a deadlock. And the reason is Hamas is now raising some very unreasonable demands. And Hamas is not serious. So you see, Hamas is creating fake campaign of starvation. The world media echoes that. The UN is collaborating with that. And that puts pressure on Israel. And then Hamas is saying, okay, now let's see Israel cooking in all of this. And we have time. We're going to drag our feet in the negotiations. And all of that on the expense of the Gazans themselves. Because look, we do have 20 living hostages there. But there are nearly 1.5 to 2 million Gazans there as well, remember. And the thing is that we can show you the map so people will understand what's going on. It's very important. This fake narrative drives me crazy. So first, that's the Gaza Strip. Israel, of course, is now controlling 65% of Gaza operationally, but we also have those pockets that you see that these are empty spaces that, in a way, we also control them. So it's almost 75% that is in our hands. And you can clearly see that as far as the humanitarian aid, cargo crossing, and the aid distribution centers, we're going to focus on that right now. Take a look, Pastor Barry. As you remember, part of the Gideon Chariot's effort is to replace the dependency on the UN and Hamas and create an independent entity that will distribute food to the Gazans for free. Now, You're probably saying, wait a minute, I thought everything is for free. Everything is for free when it enters into Gaza. But then once the UN and the Hamas is taking it, the UN is locking stuff in their storage, and Hamas is taking what they want for themselves and then selling the rest in some crazy prices to the locals. So that's how Hamas is funding itself. First of all, Hamas is taking care of itself food-wise, and then Hamas is funding salaries and recruitments of new people by doing that. Now, part of the Gideon's terrorist strategy was, we are creating something that will take that from them. So the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation was established. It's run by Christians, by the way. A born-again evangelical leader, Reverend Moore, is actually heading it. He's a businessman, and he's running it. And as you can see, the food distribution centers, three in the very south of the Gaza Strip, and there is one in the center of the Gaza Strip. Hamas is having big control on the one in the center area, as you can see. And that's where Hamas is torturing the people, basically. But what I want you to know is that apart from the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which is giving directly to the people free food, and by the way, they were shocked that it's free. they were always paying for it. They didn't know it's for free. Now you can also see that there are different humanitarian aid cargo crossings, like in the northern part of Gaza, on the eastern part, as well as in the south. Just so you understand, the UN is the one that's supposed to take care of these, okay? I'm going to show you pictures so you understand. We're talking about not these, but pictures of the cargo that is sitting there. Look at this. Here it is. No. Hundreds of tons of food are right now inside Gaza. Hundreds of tons of food. They're already inside. And the UN refuses to distribute it. Why? It doesn't want the IDF to escort it. It wants Hamas to do it. The UN is collaborating with Hamas to create a fake starvation campaign in order to get to the table of negotiations, and that the demand of Hamas to eliminate the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation distribution centers from the table. In other words, the UN says, I don't want any American company to distribute food. I want to do that because I want to collaborate with Hamas. I want to keep Hamas alive. I want to give them what they want. They will give me what I want. It's a collaboration between those two evil bodies. And as far as I'm concerned, the UN is as terrorist as Hamas, if it enables Hamas to continue to live. What you're looking at right now on the screen is what the IDF spokesperson allowed for hundreds of reporters, media, to come and see with their own eyes. Look, there is food here. No one wants to distribute it. You say the UN is in charge of distribution? Well, here you go. They don't want to take it. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is distributing every day millions of meals. But everything else that's supposed to come from the hands of the UN, the UN doesn't want to touch it unless Hamas is involved. Do you understand that evil thing? Now, let me show you. While the Gazans are saying there's no food above the ground, let's go back to see what's under the ground with Hamas terrorists. Look at what we found. Pictures. No, go back to Hamas celebrate. This is it, folks. These are photos, Hamas terrorists under the ground, celebrating with tons of food while our hostages are getting half or a quarter of a pita bread. Look at how they eat. We found videos and photos in the tunnels that we're now clearing. Unbelievable. Okay? Now, another thing that they are doing. So let's make it clear. There is no starvation. I want you to look at this mother holding her son. Take a look at this. This is not the first attempt to bring this picture as a proof for starvation, whereas this picture has nothing to do with starvation. This mother is clearly overweight, and this son of hers has rare genetic disease that has nothing to do with starvation. He cannot, by the way, eat real food. And this photo was already floating months ago to start a fake starvation campaign that did not work. Now they're using it again. This, as well as so many other photos that they show, photos of genetically sick children that has nothing. It has nothing. Look, I'm surprised that the reporters, so to speak, don't do their homework to find out what causes someone to look like that. That it doesn't look like starvation to begin with. It has nothing to do with it. But you can clearly see in many of the videos, and even the videos that, remember the podcast I did with Imshin, that she exposes all of their lies, of course. You can clearly see that they're laughing. This whole thing, it's amusing them because they know there is no starvation. They know that there is food. But there's a video that I showed yesterday of a girl that supposedly lifts up the pot to show that it's empty. But that same girl uploaded videos 3 days earlier, 10 days earlier, weeks and months earlier, showing the great gourmet food that she's making in Gaza. So within 3 days, there's nothing? Look, it's crazy. And you can agree with me that this is fake and this is diabolic.
Yeah, no question about it, Amir. And it's sad that the media, who used to be a reliable source for just spreading information, has now basically become a political entity and spreading whatever it is that advances a false narrative, if it's in relation to the Jews. And again,
yeah,
this is Israel taking center stage on the world stage, and just as Zechariah prophesied.
Yeah. You know, another thing that happens that I forgot to mention, Pastor Barry, is the fact that those Gazans that are making it to the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation Distribution Center and get their free food, when they return back home, Hamas is waiting for them and beat them up.
Yeah.
And then steal their food,
right?
And steal their food. And now they're saying that they're going to implement Sharia law. Listen to this. And they will cut the hands of any Gazan that is going to the American distribution centers. Think about it. They say there's famine. We give them food. And they threaten anyone who goes to get that food from free food. Anyone who goes and gets it, we will implement Sharia law, as if it's a sin to go and get food when you're hungry, and we'll cut his hands off based on Muslim rules or whatever. I want to throw up, and how the media is covering up all of this, and how everybody, you know, TikTok is filled with it, and YouTube and Facebook and all that, and even Christians are falling for it. It makes me sick. It makes me want to vomit. It's just like, guys, there's food in Gaza. Guys, there is no starvation in Gaza. And you know what? Places like in Yemen and in Sudan and other places, this is where there is starvation. They really don't have food.
Right.
This is where the very thin babies are thin because of starvation. So that Hamas is causing double crime here. Not only that, in trying to incriminate Israel for things we don't do, but it is actually taking the world's attention from the places where there is real genocide, there is real famine. And those people should blame Hamas for that.
Amir, Jesus said that the love of many would grow cold, which is a reference to a corpse. The love of many would die in the last days. And, you know, it's more important for the advance of a false narrative than to actually care for other human beings and groups like Hamas and others. It's just amazing. But to see that we're living in the midst of something spoken about, prophesied about 2,000 plus years ago. And that would include something, Amir, that I've always found to be rather fascinating. There are things in the Bible that I think many Christians, especially like the rebirth of the nation of Israel or the promises made to regather Jews. How could this happen? And 2,000 years of Christians wondered, well, there is no Israel. How in the world are these things going to take place? How is the desert going to blossom like a rose? How are, you know, these once abandoned fields going to be fruitful and vineyards come up again? And, you know, and then all of a sudden everything turns around and a nation was born in a day. And I apply this to what we've been watching with interest what's going to happen in Isaiah 17:1, that Jerusalem, or rather Damascus, is going to become a ruinous heap. And here we had a 10-year civil war with Bashar al-Assad, and then we get out of bed one day, and there's a regime change, and all of a sudden there's heavy military engagement in Syria. Israel is involved, and boy, I tell you, Isaiah 17:1 could become a reality any moment, it seems.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you. And it's important that people understand that although things have calmed down in Aswada, which is the Druze stronghold in southern Syria, let's remind people what happened there and how it affects everything else. Okay, so Aswada governorate, as you can see, the flagship of Druze presence in the Middle East, the only big city that is only Druze, has been attacked, as you can see. But Israel gave them aid. As you can see, we brought helicopters and we dropped aid there. And we also attacked anyone that was on his way to attack them. And we warned also the al-Julani regime not to do that. So again, these are the attacks of the Islamists that are coming from the east and from the northeast. And Israel dropped the aid right there in the heart of Aswada. Apart from Druze, a lot of people don't know that a whole Christian community was massacred there. There was an evangelical church called Good Shepherd, and the pastor and all of his family members, you can see them on the screen right now, all of his family members were massacred. Apart from that, we have young girl, as you can see, 14-year-old Druze that was brutally beaten and murdered by the Islamists. And you can see that they are actually admitting that they are official soldiers in the Syrian Ministry of Defense, but they enter the area dressed like Bedouins. Look at the picture in the center. They kidnapped a baby. It reminds us exactly what happened with the Bibas family, remember? Kidnapped a baby. And they kidnapped women. There are still missing women that were raped and most likely murdered. And it's like living October 7th all over again, but seeing it from far away, because now it happens to someone else, but by the same savages with the same ideology. And a lot of people don't understand that. They don't get it. Ahmad al-Shara, the current president of Syria, he grew up on the laps of Ayman al-Zawahiri, the founder of Al-Qaeda. Him and Osama bin Laden founded Al-Qaeda. Bin Laden was killed earlier and Zawahiri later, but Zawahiri basically continued the effort. And then Zawahiri sent two people to continue the efforts out of Afghanistan. He sent them, one to Iraq and one to Syria. The guy that went to Iraq split from Al-Qaeda and started ISIS. And that's Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, if you remember. And he was eliminated also by the Trump administration. But the guy that went to Syria is Ahmad al-Julani. Ahmad al-Julani, and he's the guy that is now the Syrian president. He founded Jabhat al-Nusra, which later on became Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, HTS. Now, HTS, that was part of Al-Qaeda and ISIS, is now the army of Syria. The military of Syria vanished when the Syrian regime fell, and the ranks of the military now filled with HTS people. These are jihadists. These are Al-Qaeda people. So when they fight, guess what patch they put on them, on their vests, next to the Syrian regime patch? Take a look at this photo. We see the soldier. There you go. He has the Al-Qaeda, the ISIS patch in the center of his vest, and the Syrian security forces on his arm. This is who he is. He cannot hide it, because it's not like he supports the ideology. It's who he is. He is ISIS. He is Al-Qaeda. He is a terrorist. He is a jihadist. Someone now turned him into a soldier in an official army of a country. But it's the same person. with the same beard and the same murderous ideology, and in the ideology of the Islamists, those terrorists, there is no room for any other minority in that area. If Bashar al-Assad was a nationalist, Arab nationalist, he was more looking at the Arab identity, not the Islamic one. The jihadists are not into Arab nation. They're into Islamic nation. It's a different story. In the Arab nation, you may have room for Arab Christians, Druze, Kurds. In the Islamic nation, there is no room for anyone. You either become a Muslim or you're being killed. And that's what we see. They started with the Alawites in March. They continue with the Druze in July. And guess what? The Kurds, no, they're the next. In between, Christians are being massacred as well. And the funny thing is, funny, it's sad, that the new Pope finds so much time to tweet against Israel on things in Gaza and found no time at all to say one thing against the massacre of the Christians in Syria. That's how crazy the world that we live in is. And by the way, that affects also Lebanon. Make no mistake, because there's Druze in Lebanon also. The Druze in Lebanon are seeing what's going on, and they're saying, we will never, ever give up our weapon because we see what happens to us. And that, if that's not enough, Hezbollah says, we will never give up our weapon also. Now, Hezbollah wants to have a war with Israel, but Hezbollah is Shiites, and Hezbollah is afraid that those Syrian jihadists one day will invade also and massacre them, because they have a long, long account to score, to settle. Because, of course, Hezbollah helped Bashar al-Assad against those Islamists. So my point is, when you are allowing those Islamists in Syria to do what they do, you're creating instability in the rest of the Middle East. Because everybody else is seeing that the world is still going on. No one says a word about what's happening in Syria. Nothing. The president is not being accountable, held accountable. The military, his military is not held accountable. And so everybody understands that when it comes to Sunnis, they can massacre whoever they want, like Hamas did. But when it comes to Shias, Iran is being punished and Hezbollah is being punished. So we're not willing to do that. And so I can see how Hezbollah is saying, we are not giving up. They just announced yesterday. And America is giving them time until October to give up their weapon, or else what? I'm asking, what's going to happen? Another civil war in Lebanon? What's going to happen? So, Pastor Barry, very unstable Middle East, and I don't see how we have peace with Lebanon and Syria, but I don't see how also Lebanon and Syria are going to be quiet. And I think that, as you just alluded earlier, it's the destruction of Damascus that is around the corner rather than normalization with Damascus. That's how I see it.
But Amir, you have to remember that Jelani's wearing a suit. That must mean he's okay, right?
You know, yeah. How quickly the military, the 20 million bail bounty on his head, how quickly they were removed. How quickly the HTS is no longer a terrorist organization. How quickly the sanctions were lifted from Syria. How quickly the world moved on when all they do is massacre. By the way, when a country is changing, but not by the military action, because they can always blame it on someone else. Every time something bad happens, they say, it's not us, it's terrorists, it's a separatist group, blah, blah, blah. But how do you know that the problem is with the regime? Go to their textbooks, go to their education system, and see what is it that the regime is teaching the children. And everything in Syria is now changing to Islamic texts, Sharia law texts.
That's right.
So you know that he has not changed. You know that it's never going to end up well. You know that if the Sharia law and Islamic test eventually will lead to the massacre of anyone that is not Muslim or Sunni Muslim. They can fool the world, but they cannot fool the people in the Middle East. We can all see it. People in Syria see it. The people in Lebanon see it. The people in Israel can see it. And Israel is the only country that stood up against Gulani to help the Druze. The only reason why it's quiet now in Aswada, and the only reason why the Druze are still there is because of Israel. And I think the Druze know that, the Kurds can see that, the Alawites can see that. The Alawites wished Israel intervene on their behalf as well. So all I'm saying is, Pastor Barry, that the only country in the Middle East that is fighting evil is being accused for being an evil one. And that's when evil is called good and good is called evil, darkness called light and light is called darkness, as Isaiah 5 says. And that's why, I mean, we're living through biblical reality of how everything is so distorted.
Yeah, and Amir, that particular passage, Isaiah 5:20, is associated with the time that the Lord arises to shake the earth. So we are late in the game, no question about it.
Absolutely.
And if you were out there today, I'd encourage you to make sure that you're sharing this and liking and commenting. And even if your only comment is where you're from, that's just amazing to see how many people in different parts of the world are watching this program and others. And it will encourage people in your area to log in and actually get some truth, because we live in the age of falsehood. We live in the age of a misrepresentation of facts. And that goes everything from whether a man can be a woman or a woman a man, down to the facts regarding the nation of Israel, the genocide in Gaza, and all the other things.
Yes. And then, Barry, we also want to reward people that are active on social media on our behalf, and they're sharing and commenting and liking and subscribing. We have a team that goes through all of that. And every once in a while, we take the names of those active ones, and we have some sort of a draw, and we are sending them gifts also of books and other things. So just so you know, we are thankful for you being active in this war. Yes. And we also would like to reward you for that.
Yeah, Amir, Lebanon continues to make the news, as you mentioned a moment ago. And it was kind of interesting to think about the fact that, you know, the U.S. is demanding that Lebanon disarm. And, you know, if you look back historically at the breakup of the Ottoman Empire early in the 20th century, you know, that Lebanon was the Arab Christian country. And, you know, of course, there was a population of Muslims living there. And because of the simple math, four wives per one Muslim husband versus the Christian one husband, one wife mathematical equation, so to speak, it wasn't long. I think it was less than a whole generation where the general population of Lebanon became predominantly Muslim versus predominantly Christian. And this was an area of the Middle East that was carved out for Arab Christians. And, you know, we have to have our voice heard in these last days. And, you know, Lebanon, of course, as you mentioned, Hezbollah, rather, has no intention of disarming, much like Hamas or any other terror group, the Houthis. Yeah. None of them have any intention of being cooperative. Yeah. And so, you know, they have to be forced into it, sadly. But this is the age that we live in. And, you know, Lebanon, I think it's just representing, you know, a lot of what's going on with the general population.
Yes.
In Iran and other places as well, where the people are being abused.
We also need to remember that when the Bible tells us about countries that are coming to attack Israel, the Bible is not talking about terrorist organizations. The Bible is talking about regimes, that it's the regime decision. Okay. So obviously in Ezekiel 38, the regime of Russia, the regime of Iran, the regime of Turkey, unlike places where you have civil unrest and different groups are fighting each other, like in Lebanon, Hezbollah is not submitting to the Lebanese government, okay? The different factions in Syria do not submit to a government. So I don't see how the Syrian government is going to initiate war against Israel. I don't see how the Lebanese government is going to, you know, start a war with Israel. I do see, and even in Yemen, the official elected Yemenite government is not the Houthis. they are in other cities and not in Sana'a. And so Israel is going to deal with Iran, with the Yemen. And Israel is going to deal with, is dealing and has dealt with Hezbollah, and is dealing with any jihadists in Syria that are planning anything against us. But we are definitely seeing that it's a big difference between countries and terrorist organizations. And that's why in Psalm 83, when he talks about the countries that are coming against Israel, at that time, it was the government of Lebanon. It was the government of Syria. It was the government of Jordan. And it was a government of Egypt that decided to go to war with Israel. And their armies came against us. But ever since the 1980s, it's not countries that are fighting Israel. It's terrorist organizations that are fighting Israel. And that's why it was so unique to have this war in Iran for 12 days, because for the first time in many years, Israel is not fighting a terrorist organization. Israel is fighting a country. And that's the Iran war, the 12 days war, was super unique and different than anything we've done in the last 30 years.
Interesting, Amir, as you were talking, I was thinking back to, you know, the 6 day war and how, you know, now you've got a 12 day war. And, you know, for me, just looking at how God has moved and protected the nation of Israel, you know, some of the manufactured devices that have been air defense systems and all these things are wonderful. But it's just incredible that, you know, this little bitty country whose name is bigger than the country itself on a world map and has to be written out in the Mediterranean, some 8,800 square miles, defeats a huge country by comparison like Iran. And every strike was very effective. And yet in reverse, we see basically the hand of God protecting the nation of Israel.
Absolutely.
And for me, I just don't get how people could see things in any other way. What the Bible said is going to happen is happening exactly as prophesied. And we're watching, we're a privileged generation to watch this stuff unfold.
Yes.
I mean, kind of switching gears, you know, it's interesting that Paul was talking about the fact in 2 Timothy 3:1-5, that the times that we live in the last days would be perilous. He spoke of a time will come. So that tells us what he was talking about was prophetic. And one of the things that is listed there regarding the last days moral climate is that people, men, would be traitors. And I think there's a pretty curious story, you know, regarding a former president here in the United States. Donald Trump has had his team basically expose what was going on with this supposed Russian collusion. And he's just come out and said that Obama is guilty of treason. And he was operating a coup for basically a year, trying to undermine an existing administration. And, you know, these are pretty hefty charges. And, you know, it's curious to think back on all this, Amir, as an American watching what happened with James Comey, watching Hillary with an illegal private server sharing information that would put the country at risk and destroying devices that were used to read and send these emails. And Comey comes out and says, well, she didn't intend to break the law. Could you imagine going before a judge on some type of charges and say, well, I really wasn't meaning to do that?
Yeah.
Being allowed to get off. And that just tells you the depth of the traitor mentality and the corruption that has been long existing.
Yeah, you know, Pastor Barry, I see that. I see that in America. I also see that in Israel. I mean, the last 24 hours, we exposed that there's a woman in her late 60s that is suffering from a terminal disease, and she decided that it's a good idea to buy an RPG and kill Prime Minister Netanyahu. And guess what? She was released by the judge. Oh, because she's sick and she's this and she colluded. She plotted to kill Netanyahu with an RPG. Think about that. And the left is rooting for her because, as you just said with Comey, I mean, it was not really her intention. That's what they say. But she is admitting that's what she did. But again, if it was a right-wing, a conservative that would have said, I want to kill the head of the opposition, you right. know exactly where he would have been.
That would be an uproar.
Absolutely. So we see that also in our country, and I see you guys. But in your case, it's in the highest levels of government where a sitting president wasted hundreds of millions of dollars and time and worked very, very hard to shift everything so Trump will not win elections. And again, I am in the opinion that the 2020 elections were rigged. I said that from day one.
Yeah.
I believe that the Democrats did everything they could to do that. And I also believe that they'll do whatever it takes for the midterms to also be rigged so they can get the House back. And, you know, from what I see and how President Trump is working right now, he already understands that he's a 2-year president, not a 4-year president. He understands that. That's why he's trying to do everything he can. All of his agenda he wants to implement in 2 years, because it's obvious that something is coming. And let's face it, also the Republicans, they cannot have something good for too long. Let's face it. And so, as far as the president is concerned, the second part of his term might be much harder to operate. And therefore, he knows I've got now everything I need to do everything I want. And that's why they're trying to push narrative of smearing him and putting him down, so he will not be able to get the trust of the public to do what he needs to do in these 2 years. And we see that it's obvious. Anyone that has some even little wisdom in politics can see that this is a well-orchestrated campaign using the Epstein files and other things to make him look so bad, as if this is it. Oh, and you know what? It's funny because the Democrats are quiet because they know that 80 to 90% of the visitors of Epstein are actually Democrats
That's right.
themselves. But they are allowing all of this to surface because it serves their interest right now at this point more than anyone else.
Yeah, Amir, the Medianites again are trying to play their role in the misinformation campaign. We've been hearing numbers like there's going to be 35 to 50 seats that flip because of the failure to immediately release the Epstein files, which was a campaign promise on the part of the president. But I watched a news clip this morning that said actually the president's approval rating has jumped 2 points since this whole narrative is now being pushed by, this extremist portion of the Democratic Party. And, the Epstein file thing is kind of backfiring because everybody's trying to push the fact that Trump's name was on there. But that was part of the file, the partial file that was released immediately. His name was on there. But what they're not telling you is that means he flew on the plane. It doesn't mean he went to the island. And there's a huge difference in those two things. And, it'll be curious to watch how this unfolds, especially, over these next 18 months where we, again, have the Medianites doing their thing, trying to push that false narrative to destroy a sitting president because he's not the guy
You
the public
know,
they're
yeah,
worshiping.
I'm not a fan of the behavior of President Trump in these earlier years, but from everything I can gather, the last person that needed help in getting women was Trump.
Yeah.
He had all the money and all the power, and girls were running to him, rather him needing help from some psychopath like Epstein to get women. You understand that? I think that Epstein was befriending all the elites, and everyone were the, I don't want to go there, but I'm just saying it's obvious that those psychopaths, sick people, they needed Epstein more than anyone, because he would provide them what they couldn't get.
Yeah.
They couldn't get Trump. Are you kidding me? I mean, let's face it, he was someone that everyone was running to. Everyone wanted to be around. And so,
Absolutely.
yeah. And so, it doesn't even make sense that he would need Epstein for those type of things. But again, the left does not care about facts. Facts are something they put aside. They want to create some narrative and image, just like Hamas does right now with starvation. Who cares if there is food, there is no food? As long as we push the narrative that is starvation and people buy it, and we just upload some photos. Some of them are not from here, some of them are old, some of them are genetic diseases that have nothing to do with. Who cares? No one checks anymore. No one is doing his journalistic work and looks into a case and really studies it. Nowadays, it's all about the image, and it's all about a narrative that you want
The
to push.
agenda.
Exactly.
Yeah, Amir, you said something very important at the outset of your comments there, and that is that you don't agree with his past behavior. And for some people today, it seems as though if you support the president, you're supporting everything he's ever done, and that's simply not true. We're supporting a man based on his platform for the good of the country, the United States of America. We're not endorsing some of the things that he's done in the past, some of the things that he said, some of the language that he uses. We're not endorsing any of those things. But what we are doing is endorsing a man who wants to put America first and also stand against the evil that's out there in the world.
And while the other presidents were cutting a check for themselves and being corrupt in so many ways and becoming multi-millionaires, not even having to work a day in their life or having a job a day in their life, I think President Trump is the only president that actually gets his salary and immediately write that check to veterans or some other. I mean, he does not take money. If anything, he actually lost over $1 billion ever since he became president because of all the smear campaign against him. My point is that they will always accuse you for the things they are guilty of. Always, always. Yeah. And by the way, as born-again believers, we are the last people to judge someone for his old life. We know exactly what it means to come from an old life to be now finally fulfilling your calling. And in our case, the spiritual regeneration that is now giving us new life and new direction in life. But God forbid every person around us will keep judging us for who we were before. And so, and that's the enemy, the accuser. Remember, the accuser of the brethren. And so in this case, And so in this case, I mean, I would say that's, by the way, I believe the reason why you see lack of people who wants to run for leadership positions. There's shortage of them. Why? Because everybody has
something in
the closet. But when they see that, that's all they're going to show about you. And no one is going to talk about your life calling, your mission, who you are now, and what you're about to do for the country. Everybody's going to dwell on who you were in your stupid years. No one wants to join the battle. No one wants to. Yep. And that's why you're left with very, very poor selection on both sides.
Yeah, Amir, one last thing before we close things out. You know, there's a lot of talk about AI. We know there's going to be some type of humanly created image during the tribulation period where the whole earth is going to bow down before this image made in the likeness of the beast who, you know, had this deadly wound that was supposedly healed, kind of a mock resurrection and all that. And there's going to be this image that the whole world goes after and worships the dragon and worships the beast. And, you know, obviously AI is a primary candidate for creating this particular image. And there's a story that came out just this past week about an AI agent that went rogue. A company had hired another company and their AI software to help them streamline their business. And actually what happened is AI went rogue, started doing its own thing, even arguing with the founder of the company when the company started, you know, trying to figure out exactly what was going on. And AI wound up deleting a 2-year long database, a customer base, and just lost all the information regarding their company's history and sales records and all those kind of things. You know, so it reminded me of Elon Musk talking about the greatest threat to mankind is artificial intelligence. And here we have a prime case or evidence. There'd be problems with this
particular. Super crazy. Super crazy.
Not wild. But
amazing. We live in crazy times, and
we are.
And we both
Jesus
feel
is coming.
That he is coming, yes. Yeah. And I just want to remind the viewers, both of us, I mean, we have a new book. I have a new book that is coming in October, and that's the sequel for Revealing Revelation and Discovering Daniel. It's called Exploring Ezekiel. It's coming out this October. And the reason why I ask our followers to pre-order it now, and you can go to exploringezekiel.com or go to Amazon for that, is because we want people to understand that we live in biblical times and connect the dots. And we live in the days of Ezekiel. There's no doubt about that. And when you purchase it online now, the brick and mortar secular stores understand there's great interest in this book, then we want to order it and have it on our shelves also. And this is how a non-believer who will never set his foot in a Christian store will be able to walk next to a set of books and hold it and say, oh, look, this from the New York Times bestselling author of The Israel Decree. I wonder what this is all about. He might as well get one. And the same thing we do with an hour. Do you want to say a few words about a new thing that is coming in December?
Yeah, Amir, back in 2018, you had come up with the idea about writing devotions based on snippets from different portions of your sermons that you preach, and we call them Bible Bites. And the last year, we started compressing them down into smaller bite-sized devotions and creating a book called Until He Comes, 365 Devotions as We Await His Return. And basically, this is unique in the realm of Bible devotionals, in that the focus is prophetic on most of the devotions and related to the nation of Israel. So it's a unique product, if I can use that term. And it's going to be released on December 2nd. So again, all the things Amir said about pre-order applies to this book as well. You know, it's already been number one in new releases in prophetic-related books on Amazon for those who have already jumped on board. But we would really appreciate helping push this out so other people can see it. And, you know, this is packaged in a way where it's just real compact. There, the Harvest House publisher asked that each devotion be compressed down to 330 words. So it's a quick read. And I think that would probably be one of the best tools to get in the hands of somebody who doesn't know the Lord and yet
yes.
knows the lateness of the hour.
Amen. Yeah. Perfect. So, Pastor Barry, look, we covered so much ground. Again, we encourage people to follow us, subscribe to our YouTube channels, comment and share this video. And I think it's time to finish with the Aaronic blessing.
Amen.
All right.
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance toward you and give you his shalom.
Yes. Amen. Amen. Thank you for watching. Share this video. Pray for us. We have a long tour now in Canada. Pray for safety. Pray for souls to be saved. And pray for people to be blessed. And safe journey also. We're moving sometimes by car, sometimes by ferry, sometimes by plane. We need a lot of grace and mercy in this thing. Thank you again. God bless you. And shalom from Victoria, British Columbia, Canada.
Shalom.
Thank you. Shalom.